in the true spirit of sportsmanship for the glory of sports and the honor of our teams. Sure, it's the Olympic oath, but it's also Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690.
Welcome back. Welcome to Friday Afternoon on Melnick in the Afternoon on TSN 690. From his first solo album that came out in the 80s, produced by Daniel Lanois. It's also the name of one of the best books about rock and roll, the history of rock and roll, the business of rock and roll that you'll ever read. Testimony by Robbie Robertson. He's on stage tonight with Ann Legacy Dowson at the Saputo Auditorium on Royal Avenue at LCC at 7 o'clock. And it's a pleasure to welcome him to Melnick in the Afternoon with Mitch Melnick and Robbie Robertson. How you doing?
I'm pretty good, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. I know rock and roll is a vicious game. We were waiting on you. We were told that you weren't going to come on, and you can imagine how bummed out we were, especially back home kind of for you. Welcome back home.
Yeah. This is an old hood of mine around here.
that's an element of your story, your life story, that a lot of people probably aren't aware of. How long did you actually spend here?
Well, it was over a period of time, but because the band was on the road a lot, I wasn't here consistently, but my wife Dominique is from here, my daughter Alexandra, my daughter Delphine were born here, and I've lived in scattered neighborhoods around town, Côte de Neige, Notre-Dame-de-Grâce, a little bit over near Outremont,
How about that?
I've been around.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I know when you guys were trying to think of where to go to leave the Woodstock scene, which was changing dramatically, you thought for what, about 5 seconds about maybe coming here?
Well, I was coming here. I had a house here. And, and Dominique really wanted to have, her culture and her language and her tradition. And I very much respected that. And so we could drive up here from Woodstock, and we were able to go back and forth. But like I said, our schedule back then, we were all over the place. So it was very inconsistent.
Robbie, the book, I was so disappointed when it ended. But as I'm getting into, the last part of the book, and I see it's getting thinner and thinner, and I'm going, there's no way he's going to tie up some of these loose ends. There's got to be a second volume here.
Oh, yeah. No, I specifically wanted to write this book up to the last waltz. And because it did culminate with the story of the band. So that's what I wanted to do. And yes, I am going to, at the beginning of the year, I'm going to start writing volume two.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
That's when things really get messed.
With Robbie Robertson, the book is Testimony. How long did it take you, and what makes, among many reasons why this book is so riveting, is it reads in many instances like a novel because you've got complete conversations that took place 40, 50 years ago. I mean, I know your mom had an incredible memory. Did you picked that up from her?
Well, so did my on my blood father's side too. The Kligermans also were noted for their memory, and my father was a card counter, a gambler, and so it runs in the family.
Yeah, and so you've been holding this, all these stories around for forever. Why did you finally, was this in any way response to the book that Levon wrote a few years ago, and or?
Oh, no. No, none whatsoever. There was people that wanted to write biographies on me over the years, and I tried. I gave them some time, and it didn't work out, and I came to the conclusion that at some point, I've got to get around to this. I've got to do it myself. And because I found in doing it with somebody else, and believe me, there's a big difference between writing the book yourself and someone else writing it, and you talk into a tape recorder. I wish it was that easy. But anyway, I did. I started several years ago, and I was working on a whole bunch of different things at the time. So, I wasn't really just focused on it. And in the back of my memory, in the back of my mind, I was trying to find the structure that I wanted to use, and I needed to do kind of a cinematic theme to it. So, but it was an incredible exercise in memory, and I have this memory chip that I can resort to, and I can go back, and I do have this kind of recall.
And you're a humongous movie buff, right? And so a lot of people out there who don't know the stories, who have heard other stories and say, how could the kid from Canada write so vividly about the American South? You soaked it up, right? You read movie scripts, you studied, you went to libraries, and you also have an imagination.
Yeah, you put that all together and stir it up, and there's no telling what you get.
Yeah, but what do you say to that? You know, go a little deeper. Like, for example, the night they drove Old Dixie down. I mean, how do you realize at the time when this is coming out of you how great the material is?
Well, I knew that I was writing something that wasn't the usual. I knew I was doing something that was not in any way trendy, but it was a reflection on when I had gone from Canada down to the Mississippi Delta, and it made such an impression on me. It overwhelmed me, and I was soaking it up, and I took it in so deeply that at some point it had to come out. I had to find a way to free these ideas and these memories. And also, I wanted to write a song that Levon could sing better than anybody. So all of these pieces just led me in that path.
How tight were you guys?
Brother, yeah.
And you talk about your father and the uncle in your book. Your uncle actually did time. I'm curious if that was part of your thought process as you and Levon were, what, planning a robbery?
Yeah, I know. We were hanging out with the wrong people, let's say, Mitch, back
yeah.
then, you know. And for as crazy as it is, it didn't seem that far-fetched, because it was in the places that we played, so many of these characters were not law-abiding citizens. A lot of them were thieves. And a lot of it, you know, and some of it rubbed off on us, and not in the best sense of the word. So anyway, we were about to do something really stupid, but fortunately, something stepped in and derailed it. So, you know...
Yeah.
Here's
so,
the fate.
So you ended up stealing Paul Butterfield's weed instead, is that it?
that part is true.
Yeah. So in a song we started the show with from How to Become Clairvoyant, this is
Have
where...
Have you heard the new version of that?
Of This Is Where I Get Off, or the new version of the album?
Oh, no. Testimony. I didn't... there is a new version of Testimony on the companion CD that goes with the book. That is, it's a trip.
Okay.
And it's because the book was called is called Testimony. I went back to explore this track. I thought, God, I cut this song called Testimony. Let me go back and pull up the faders and see what's there. And it was a complete surprise on what I got. So we did a mix of it, and it's the people involved in it. It's a phenomenon. So anyway, that was a great surprise as well.
And we're going to go out with one of the songs that I'm happy to discover is also on that companion CD. But I wanted to ask you about, you know, This Is Where I Get Off. Walking out on the boys was never the plan. We just drifted off course, couldn't strike up the band. It's hard for people to believe because Levon became, as you know, so angry and bitter. And he even in the book, and I know it was written by somebody else, but wouldn't even say your name. He'd say Robertson, right? I mean, it should be pointed out that you, as a very, very strong creative force, you were dealing with three guys, as brilliant as they were, who were extremely troubled. Is that not fair?
Well, it's all fair, you know, in love and war, I guess. But there was during that period in the 70s, things got dark. And Levon, I thought the world of him. He was one of the most talented people I've ever known in my life. And we were in this group, a band of brothers. And darkness and drugs and all, which happened to a lot of groups back then, too. We weren't unique in this area. But it took a big toll, and it separates people. So we had to deal with that, and that's ultimately what led us towards The Last Waltz.
Yeah. You may have heard that there's a 40th anniversary celebration that we've put together for a week. What are you doing next Friday?
Next Friday, I'll be in Los Angeles next Friday.
Okay, so I just thought I'd ask. But one of the things that I've discovered in the musicians who are so psyched about performing these songs, they originally grabbed a lot of songs, and then they came back and said, you know what, it's a little too tough. Let me try another one. The musicianship of the band, when did it dawn on you that what you were creating, before you guys were on the cover of Time or anything, was going to last this long and going to dig deep into fellow musicians, like really deep?
Well, you can't really forecast, you know, what's going to come. You don't know that. But what I did know was that music that I really admired, that all of the guys in the band really admired, was music that had a timeless quality to it. And so, you know, with a lot of things that were going on, and like I said before, some things were kind of trendy and of the times and everything, we weren't interested in that at all. I wasn't interested in writing those kind of songs. And so I was trying to reach outside of the obvious, and at the same time, you know, when we would record something, I'd think, I wonder if this is going to hold up. And I wonder if other musicians are going to appreciate the subtleties and the depth in what we're shooting for.
And was it prior to hooking up with Dylan, who you didn't really know much about, unbelievably, right? Was it that, or was it these tapes that were made that were sent to artists who were going to cover some of the songs that realized, oh my God, these guys are good? Like, how did that occur?
Well, it was all part of a process. You know, before we hooked up with Bob Dylan, we weren't very familiar with the folk music scene. You know, we were playing this Chitlin circuit down south, and you know, in the New York area and up into Canada, and we knew that this was happening. We knew that there was people that appreciated that, but where they played, where folk musicians played, were in coffee houses. Where we played was in down in dirty bars and clubs. And so I made a joke in the past, you know, I said, you know, listening to folk music, people were sipping cappuccinos. Wasn't nobody sipping cappuccinos where we were.
the last waltz, was there anybody you approached who said no, or was there anybody that you thought, you know, you had so much going on trying to get the movie made and all of that, but that you thought, oh, geez, he should have been there, or she should have been there?
I don't think so. I don't remember asking anybody at that time. And I don't think it was completely, it wasn't just random, you know, just naming people off a list. It was people that we had some kind of a connection to, musically and in some cases personally. So we weren't reaching to, you know, I mean, I might have thought of George Harrison, but we just didn't get around to it. But George was a, you know, a dear old friend, and we would have loved to have done something with him. But I just don't think we could have, you know, we just didn't get around to it. We had enough on our plate.
It was unbelievable. One of the musicians, he's a legend in Montreal, named Shane Murphy, was with me a couple of days ago, and he wanted to throw these questions at you as we finish up with Robbie Robertson.
Two questions. Is it really true that the Stratocaster that you're playing in The Last Waltz was Buddy Holly's original Stratocaster, which is the legend? And my second question would be, did you really take it apart and get the body bronzed, which is also apparently supposed to be true? So that's in guitar lore, legend.
Okay, so this is really inside rock and roll history here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead,
yeah.
Robbie.
Well, it wasn't Buddy Holly's guitar, but I did have the opportunity to meet Buddy Holly briefly when I was, I don't know, maybe 13 years old, 14, something like that. And he did pass a couple of secrets on to me about how he got that sound out of his amp. But the second part of the question is absolutely true, that I had, for The Last Waltz, I had that Stratocaster bronzed, just the way you would baby shoes.
Right.
And for some reason, it seemed like a good idea at the time. It did change the sound of the guitar, and it did make it heavier. And that guitar has been living at in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum for the last few years.
Final one for Robbie Robertson. Words After Dark tonight at 7 o'clock at the Saputo Auditorium on Royal Avenue at LCC with Anne Legacy Dowson moderating. And you'll be able to get testimony, of course, the book. Again, a fabulous book. So I've been listening to everything in preparation for the concert we put together next Friday and also for this conversation. And I discovered a gem. Initially, when I heard it on the band's musical history box that came out about 10 years ago, I thought it was Richard Manuel vocal. This is a gorgeous song. Matt Mays is going to perform it next Friday at the Corona, called Twilight. Can you take us out with this and the backstory to this?
Oh, right. I wrote this song. I wrote this song with Rick Danko in mind. Rick had a thing in his voice where something, if it leaned in a direction of being a little bit more traditional or mountain music or something, and so I, on the companion CD, there's a version of it where I'm singing it to the other guys to say, here, I got a new tune, guys, see what you think about this, and Rick, you know, see if this key sounds right for you.
Yeah, but this is the original one from the box set.
Yep.
Okay. Robbie, thank you so much for this. Greatly appreciate it. Thank you for all the music.
Thank you, Mitch, and thank all the boys next Friday, too, for doing this celebration of The Last Waltz. I'm honored, and we really appreciate it.
Our pleasure. All the best to you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Over by the wildwood, hot summer night, we lay in the tall grass till the morning light. If I had my way, I'd never get the urge to roam. But a young man serves his country, an old man guards the home. Don't send me no silly salutations or silly souvenirs from far away. Don't leave me alone in the twilight.